Pop Spotting 151.
Monday, October 24th, 2011.
Give me the main event.
Come on, Jeff.
Finn, this is Noisy Boy, an original Takemishito bot. He was a World Robot League boxer. Come on.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Movie Monday, and today we're going to talk about Real Steel.
Yes, this is a PG-13 robot boxing movie starring Hugh Jackman, young Dakota Goyo, and our friend Evangeline Lilly. Now, we've been seeing trailers for this film for a while, and I'd say universally the reaction had been kind of rolling our eyes, and, you know, obviously it's not aimed at adults necessarily. It's aimed at younger people. I think we saw it mostly out of our irrational loyalty to Lost alumni on the big screen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we even skipped the advanced screening. We weren't really excited to see it. Suffice it to say, we had fairly low expectations for Real Steel. Jen, did Real Steel meet those expectations?
For me, they exceeded those expectations because it's shiny and it's loud. And there's something about this kind of movie that I just eat up with a spoon when I'm in the mood. You know, I have this love of car films like Death Proof and the Fast and the Furious films, and this is kind of in the same vein. It's noisy and it's shiny, but it's also sort of sweet. It is a kind of a family friendly film, but I thought that only gave it more heart and more soul. So I really enjoyed it.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm not sure if I would make any of those comparisons. I do know that this is a film you have to be in the mood for, but I will agree. I mean, yes, it benefits from low expectations. It certainly exceeds that, but I had a really good time. I mean, this is not an Oscar, you know, contender. It's not a great dramatic exploration of family, but it is a good, fun movie, and it is, as you said, family friendly. We only could talk one of our kids into going to see this one with us. It was our middle son, Zachary. He's 9 years old, and he ate it up. So, I mean, if you are the parent of a young boy, certainly this one has got to be on your to-do list. But even for us as his parents, it wasn't a movie that we had to suffer our way through or really had to groan our way through or chuckle maliciously about or wryly. I enjoyed the film quite a bit.
It's admittedly kind of corny and kind of melodramatic, but I thought it was very well paced. I thought the story unfolded at a really good pace, and the special effects are wonderful, and it's fun. There's a real sense of fun in this movie, but with no winking. They're not trying to be funny. They're not trying to be coy.
Being too cool for their material.
Yeah.
They're just committed to it, and I give them a great deal of credit for that.
I think this movie probably has more heart in it than all three Transformers movies combined.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, robots fighting and thrashing each other, nothing new. You think that there's, you know, real no depth to it or no emotional attachment there. We haven't even seen all three Transformers films, but I'd probably take that bet at the very least. Let's talk about the cast of Real Steel, which frankly was probably the only reason why we did go ahead and see this film, starting with its star, Hugh Jackman. He plays this guy who is in this robot boxing world. He's not at the pro level. He's sort of in the underground leagues, but, you know, he's trying to make it big. He's trying to build a future. How did you think Hugh Jackman did in this film?
He's kind of a creep, and especially in the beginning, but even toward the end of the film, we're not really convinced that he's a good guy. I mean, he makes a lot of bad decisions, and he does things to really only benefit himself, and he's really not a really nice guy. Even his friend, played by Anthony Mackie, calls him a bad bet. But in the few moments where he does get kind of warm and fuzzy, I really believed him. I think that might be part of Hugh Jackman's personality coming through. But I thought this character was a lot like Han Solo in some ways.
Well, yeah, you know, I kind of like that comparison in the sense that, yes, Jackman is just the right amount of jerk. You know, he's not he's not the guy who's, you know, down on his luck with the heart of gold. It's a little harder edge than that. Not too hard, not too cruel, but he is someone that you kind of want to punch in the face sometimes. He's someone that you want to just sort of shake him and say, wake up, you know, get real. He's somebody that you do want to, though, at times protect and guide along the right path. I think that Hugh Jackman, with this material, elevates it to something that makes it entertaining. You like him even though you hate him, and that's a great vote. And we have to get to Evangeline Lilly, who is the Lost alumni we mentioned. She has had very few roles on the big screen. She was in Brothers, I think, or
no,
was
she was in the Hurt Locker, and that wasn't even a very large part. I think she had two scenes, and she maybe had a total of three lines.
Right, so here's another role where she could essentially be that, the put-upon, not really understanding, kind of left-aside female potential love interest, and can just look longingly at Hugh Jackman. I mean, that's not a tough role for anyone to play. Do you think that Evangeline Lilly does anything interesting here in Real Steel?
She does. When she was on Lost, she used to give interviews that she was a tomboy and liked to climb trees and liked to be one of the guys. And I never really got that from watching her on Lost, but I did from this movie because I think it's the scenes where she gets really into watching the matches that I really bought it. That's the times in her performance that she seemed very genuine.
Well, I really liked Evangeline Lilly here. She's not given much to do. She's not given much to work with, but for one, I mean, we were kind of hard on her character, at least of Kate on Lost. Mm-hmm. Here, I think she takes what she gets and she does great with it. She does get to that point where you see this enthusiasm, you see her getting back into the matches, but I think that pays off. That is viable because you also believe kind of the exposition, almost the ham-handed exposition in terms of explaining her character, her relationship to Hugh Jackman's character, her relationship to her dad, and why she is this tomboy mechanic, somebody who can, you know, get into the guts of a robot and understand it. She doesn't, you know, throw out a lot of techno babble. She just owns those scenes, and because she's not trying to be more than she is, I thought she did a great job. And it's really in the chemistry that she has with the other two main characters. Now, first of all, do you feel that her chemistry with Hugh Jackman and their long history and their maybe kind of romantic level of tension there, was that played well?
I think Hugh Jackman is just one of those actors that has really good chemistry with whoever he's in a film with, especially romantic comedies, because I don't know, he seems like such a fun, likable guy. So I think the chemistry there might have been more due to him, but I did like them together. I really could not ever see them as a couple just because of how their characters were. I really felt like she knew too much about him to ever want to be with him. But as far as them knowing each other, sure, I thought that was good.
Yeah, I completely bought at least the affection, the closeness, the intimacy between the two of them. And yes, because of her role, she immediately takes a liking to the young boy, the third main character in this film, played by Dakota Goyo, playing Max. And I want to get to him in a bit, but how did you feel? I liked how she took a liking to Dakota, to Max, to the boy, but, you know, didn't really go overboard in terms of suddenly becoming a maternal role there. You know, she did keep a kind of a cool distance. She, apart from the fact that she had to muss his hair every time that she saw him, I thought that they got along well too.
They did, and I don't think we're supposed to think that she develops those kind of feelings for him, because they really don't know each other that well. This movie takes its entire story unfolds over the course of just a few weeks.
Right, and it also requires to be more focused on the relationship between Max and Hugh Jackman's character, Charlie. So let's get to Dakota Goyo, though. I mean, because the success of this film, and the heart of this film, really is the relationship between him and Hugh Jackman, or Charlie. You need Dakota Goyo to be believable as a, you know, kind of vulnerable and naive young child, but also someone who's tough enough and savvy enough to succeed or survive in this rough and tumble or expensive, dangerous, and loud universe. I thought that Dakota Goyo really did well. I mean, I think that I can see great things coming out of this kid.
He reminded me of Macaulay Culkin's character in Home Alone. You know, that same scrappy kind of kid who can live by his wits and do what he needs to do to survive, even. And I thought he was great. I loved the scene where that one scene where he's teaching the robot how to dance. He's just kind of casually hanging around in the yard, and he's syncing his movements to the robot, and he just decides to dance, and the robot copies him. I thought the way he moved was so cool. I mean, I think the kid actually really can dance, and that kind of added another dimension to his character.
Well, I will say that for all of these actors, Dakota in particular, you're asking them to do something that is almost impossible, which is not just act with and react to things that aren't there. I mean, really, these are special effects robots, but to even sort of develop a relationship relationship with this technology. So not only is this an imaginary robot that's not really there when they're filming, but somebody or something with whom you have to believe that this young boy will also get attached to and like. And so that's why I think Dakota is a great success in this film, because I believed him every step of the way. He is sassy and, you know, a little too smart with his mouth for his age, but he is still a kid, still someone who can be hurt, still someone who is still a little naive as well, and still can be surprised or betrayed by something. And I think that Dakota is walking that perfect line between someone who is not a child, you know, older than a little kid, but not a teenager and all of the things that go along with being a teenager. I think he walks that line great. And so his story, as told in this film, is something you do latch onto and want to follow through the course of the film.
But the relationship that matters most is the one between Charlie and Max. And mm-hmm. I thought they had good chemistry as well. I really felt the tension that was there between this kid and this father that was never around. And how they come together is really slimy and kind of horrible, but it's not beyond redemption. And to see them get to know each other was kind of lovely.
Yeah, I actually kind of like the conceit that comes up here in how Charlie comes to be in custody of Max and bring him into this world, because it is shameful and horrible, and it's something you really don't forget as their relationship grows, and you wonder if that comes to something or if they'll be able to overcome that. In fact, when I was thinking about the structure of this film and the story and that relationship between Charlie and Max, I like that he knows up front why Max has him. You know, that's not what turns out to be the great big misunderstanding later in the film. That's probably how a lesser writer might have structured it, mm-hmm. but it's up front and it's just something that is understood by the two of them. So yes, the father-son sort of setup between them is the heart of this film, but we should talk a little bit about what they're up against, and that brings us to the baddies.
Kevin Durant, who was also on Lost, mm-hmm. he played Kimi, plays yes. Ricky, this organizer of this really seedy underground robot fighting kind of movement, and he's very scary. I don't know what it is about Kevin Durant. It may be the fact that he's 7 feet tall, or it might be the way that he talks, but he's always scary in almost every film.
I think he's really good here. He's fun to watch as a bad guy, and that's the best kind of tribute you can give to a bad guy in a film. Maybe he's chewing the scenery a little bit. I hear what you're saying about the way he talks, whether it was on Lost or in this movie. He always seems to be chewing on something, or maybe he just ate something that really tastes horrible, but something about his inflection and the way that he enunciates already makes you know he's a bad guy. I don't know if Kevin Durant could ever play a good guy because of that, but he is a lot of fun to watch here. It is good to see him back on the screen and back to being a baddie. Now, he's on the underground side. This film does show our protagonists work their way to the professional level, and that's where we get more baddies. I guess the main baddies in this film, you've got Tak Machito, the Japanese designer of a super robot, and his partner Olga Chakova, this Russian lady. And well, I mean, do you feel that they were scary, that they were worthy of the level of danger and menace that they presented, at least as far as the story was concerned?
No, not at all. They were actually kind of cartoony because they were simply really unnecessary. They didn't have any motivation to be evil. They were there, I felt, to do their jobs. They were representatives of an evil corporation that had designed this robot, and if they had lost, that would have been really bad for them. But what would they have done? There was nothing about them that made me want to hate them. They were simply there to serve a purpose. Now, if, say, the other robot had been owned by Kevin Durant's character, that would have been scary, because this was a guy who was motivated by money and really would have taken anything he could get from you in order to meet the ends that he needed to meet. I thought he would have been perfect as the sole villain.
Well, for one thing, I agree with that Kevin Durant just hit all the right notes to the point where these other two bad guys were cartoony. And I mean, yes, you've got the Russian woman who's just scowling the whole time and has the really, really thick Russian accent. I think the actress is Russian, so I won't hold it against her, but that is almost ridiculous in terms of the stereotype of a bad guy. And then you have the Japanese guy who's also scowling a lot and just unhappy and really intense, but they're just punching in a clock, really. They don't have anything to lose. Kevin Durant in the end does, so he, you know, I think is somebody that you believe it matters as much to him to win as it does for our young boy Max and Charlie, his dad, and this Adam, this forgotten robot. So in a way, I would agree. I'm kind of disappointed in those villains, but I would also say that as far as our son Zach was concerned, they were clearly the main bad guys because they were always scowling and presented with the most evil sounding dramatic music. So maybe that's just where they felt they had to go with that. But overall, still, I think that this film told a great story. And I also thought, by the way, Real Steel looked great. I mean, in terms of production value, in terms of cinematography, in terms of lighting, film, special effects, this is a good-looking film.
It is a good-looking film. The robots look amazing. I think my favorite sequence is the sequence in the zoo, and it's not simply because of the special effects. It's really because of the way the people look and the way they're cheering against or for these robots. There's something about that particular sequence that really caught my eye.
Well, you know, I'm happy to hear you say that. The zoo sequence, this is part of when we're still in the underground robot fighting world. And yeah, I mean, I liked that sequence because it was just as, you know, gritty and dirty and dangerous as it has to be, not too much in that direction. The film was also very gleaming and technicolor and shiny and, you know, really modern when it needs to be. I like that this is a world that is real enough. I mean, it is a quote unquote dystopian future here in that we it's recognizable, but it doesn't go all the way where, you know, it doesn't go Terra Nova all the way where we've clearly screwed up the universe. There are still people living, you know, perhaps ordinary lives and still eking out some kind of existence in this world.
It doesn't go full WALL-E.
Well, yes, it doesn't go full WALL-E. I like that.
But what I liked about this film most of all, maybe, is the scenes where they're driving through the countryside on the way to a match or whatever, because there are a lot of films that do that, that have montages of driving through things. But I thought the combination of the cinematography and the score just really worked for me. I thought those sequences were really pretty.
Yeah, driving through the countryside, the sun goes down, and then you see the gleaming lights of this robot arena. I mean, yeah, it's just in many ways, again, it's a good-looking film that I think you can appreciate just on that level if that's what you want. But the story is fun. The story is solid. This movie does embrace the cliches. Yes, it's like Rocky with robots. There is a final big fight, and it even gives us the inevitable fight montage, you know, where it just sort of blends through different scenes where there's fighting going on and time passes, round one, round two, and it builds up inevitably to the big final round. And I will say that I think getting to that big match is more interesting in this film than the big match itself.
Oh, yeah,
you know, the journey
absolutely
is more interesting, but just like how these two main bad guys had to be cartoony bad guys, I think it's inevitable that we get the kind of climax that we get in this film, and yet it is not purely predictable. I think that it is still solid, and I can still appreciate how the film does deliver what we expect it to deliver, and perhaps most importantly, our son ate it up.
The funny thing is I don't think he really knows who won.
Yes, that's
because
true.
There's a funny situation where one of the robots wins, but he doesn't really win, and I think that's just an interesting twist.
It doesn't matter, you know, in the eyes of a nine-year-old that doesn't matter. Perhaps us as adult viewers, it really doesn't matter either. So a satisfying ending, a great journey overall. I think that, you know, this was a fantastic basic concept for a movie. It was a Twilight Zone episode, frankly, where we had to go to robot boxers because human boxing was outlawed. It was too dangerous. I think that it's plausible that we might end up there as well, but I think they could do more with the story. I like how they kind of touched on big pictures and big questions, but really didn't get into it. Yes, you're talking about, you know, is money ruining professional sports or professional contests versus, you know, people who do it for heart? And there's the more fundamental question, I think, that they touched on that could have been a big part of this film, which is, does human instincts, does our abilities to think creatively always trump technology and algorithms and things that can happen automatically?
Well, that's what Moneyball was all about, and I can already see the sequels to this film, and I think those kinds of questions are better suited to sequels.
Well, you know, I mean, there is going to be a sequel to Real Steel. In fact, before the film even premiered in April, they committed to a sequel to Real Steel. But I have to say, this first story was a fun ride and one that I think was well worth our time, so we'll probably check out the sequels as well.
Absolutely. If they can squeeze like 10 Rocky films out, the There are endless possibilities for sequels for this film.
And I would see that over Transformers 7 any day.
Me too.
So do you have a score for Real Steel?
3.5.
I'll give it 3.5 too. So that gives us a score of 7 out of 10 from Pop Spotting for Real Steel. PG-13 in wide release. It was number 1 when it came out. It beat Ides of March. It was number 1 in its second week. It beat Footloose, and it just seems to be holding in for number 2 this weekend. So it's got some staying power. If you've got kids, it's a must see, I would say, at least given what else is out there. And actually, walking out of the theater, one thing I said about Real Steel is this is the perfect basic cable prime time or marathon movie. You know, I can see them just running it on Father's Day, for example.
Yeah, and if I caught it while flipping through channels, I would keep it on and watch it all the way
all
through.
All right, so that's our take on Real Steel. If you've gone out to take it in, please reach out and hit us up with your review. We love movie talk of any kind, and you can reach us any number of ways.
You can send an email to feedback@popspotting.net, leave a comment on the blog at popspotting.net, or best of all, you can leave a voicemail. We can share it on the show. Just call 815-310-0808.
You can always find great stuff posted by fellow listeners on our Facebook page at facebook.com/popspotting. And if you like to tweet, well, we do too. You can find us at twitter.com/popspotting.
Come back tomorrow for TV Tuesday, where we'll talk about two of our favorite shows, Fringe and Breaking Bad.
All right. Now, if you are too tired or you keep forgetting to sync your podcast, you should check out Stitcher Smart Radio. It's an app for iPhone, Android, and other smartphones, and you can stream the latest episode of your favorite podcast straight to your phone. Hopefully, that includes Pop Spotting, and it is free.
Thank you to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and thank you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
I'm Jen.
Aloha. Aloha.